Hello and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, December 14th, 2009. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Essential Wholesale. Over 1,000 natural and organic stock cosmetic formulations and custom services. Check out their website for their exclusive 2009 Advent calendar to get big up-to-the-minute savings. Visit EssentialWholesale.com for details. And by The Media Is You, social media training designed specifically for small businesses. A one-day intensive hands-on program coming to Atlanta, New York, Chicago, and San Francisco early next year. Visit TheMediaIsYou.com to save $100 on the registration price. Well, today, you know, it's all about being successful in business, and being successful in business requires you to become somewhat of an expert at marketing your business and marketing yourself. And our guests today are experts in that area, and they have some fantastic tips to share with us to help us understand not just marketing, but marketing with our hearts and leading with emotional ties that help us make connections with our customers. My guests today are Judith Shervin and Jim Snikowski. They're a husband and wife psychology team focusing on soft sell, heart-based marketing. They lead the Soft Sell Marketers Association, and their latest book is The Heart of Marketing, Love Your Customers and They Will Love You Back. As guest experts, they've been on over 2,100 television and radio shows, including Oprah, The View, 48 Hours, and CNN. How exciting to be in such great company. And I am delighted to have them on today's show. If you're listening to the show at IndieBusinessRadio.com and you'd like to join our live chat, just click on the link on the homepage to connect using Twitter or Facebook. We'll be taking your questions and comments live during the show. Judith and Jim, welcome to Indie Business Radio.
Thank you, Donna Marie.
Thank you, Donna Marie.
Now, Judith, at the beginning of your book, you have an interesting story that kind of leads up to your involvement in the soft selling arena. You went to a conference once, and you had some sort of misgivings about some of the things that you were discovering there. Can you tell us a little bit about that so we get some background on how you began to look at soft sell and heart-based marketing?
Absolutely. It is a story that needs to be told because Jim and I started out as psychotherapists. We both have PhDs in psychology, and we were in private practice for years and years, working with couples and singles largely around their romantic relationships. And we then found ourselves in a darling, wonderful little town in upstate New York, population 1,600 people, and we'd retired from psychotherapy, and we were doing a number of things, and came online to expand our work, thinking that all we were going to do was do workshops and seminars by telephone. But you know, and hopefully everyone listening knows, that you can't just do that. You have to have marketing and you have to have selling to get people on those calls. And Jim and I knew nothing about marketing or selling, and so we had to learn. And we went to a number of internet marketing conferences and took a number of internet marketing courses. And what struck us over and over was we didn't feel like we belonged there. And at first it wasn't quite clear why, but it got clearer and clearer that the tone, the attitude, the approach to marketing was very hard sell, H-A-R-D, very much almost combat language in terms of, killer conversions and destroy your competition, insane profits, and you're going to have explosive traffic generation, and over-the-top promises of the kind of money you were going to make in 18 seconds. And we found ourselves over and over, Donna Marie, with people in the hallway at lunch like ourselves who were coaches, healers, wedding consultants, homeschool experts, interior designers, all saying the same thing. I don't belong here. This doesn't fit for me. I can't work this way. I can't sell this way. My people won't hear, listen to me if I talk like this. So Jim and I then ultimately, we ended up teaching a copywriting course to do sales copy from the heart, and then we produced our first Bridging Heart and Marketing Conference in February 2008, and it was a huge success.
So you sort of fell into this. This wasn't something that you planned. You sort of saw the need for it in yourselves, and you recognized that other people did as well?
The fact of the matter is, Donna Marie, that if, you know, a year or so prior to our having, as you say, fallen into this, somebody would have said, you're going to end up doing Internet marketing, we would have said, you're crazy.
Right, right.
It was so far afield from what we had ever experienced, so far away. Nevertheless, there it was, and since we were in it, and it was obvious that there was a need, and we knew we could fulfill that need at least to some degree, to whatever degree we thought we were able to at that time, we jumped in and took the chance. And not only did we find a need that needed to be fulfilled, but a huge market that nobody was paying attention to, and we'll get into in the course of this phone call why that was the case. But then we found ourselves leading we're the international voice for this particular kind of approach to marketing and sales because nobody else was doing it.
And Jim, you know, our audience today, my listeners, are composed of people who are perfectly described by Judith a second ago in her overview of, you know, all the people, small business owners that serve people, and we're really just uncomfortable with this sort of guerrilla marketing tactics and, you know, beating other people out and demolishing your customers. So, Judith, can you share a little bit about sort of the psyche that a small business owner who is not used to marketing but yet must market their products in order to sell them, what are some of the first things someone who's embracing this notion needs to do in order to be successful selling the way that you teach people how to sell?
Well, number one, you just said it. They must understand that marketing and selling is absolutely essential.
Let's stop right there, too, because I come across, and I'm sure you do, so many small business owners who are so passionate about what it is that they do, and they have a service or a product that really does enhance people's lives, but they're terrified of the sales process, and they avoid it, and oftentimes can't quite figure out why nobody's buying their products just because they're so good.
Exactly. And really, that's where Jim and I came from as well, because when we were in private practice, we never sold or marketed. We got all of our clients from word of mouth,
right?
Referral like that. And so it had never crossed our mind that that was really important. But if we think about people who come into coaching or healing, whether it's a medical doctor, chiropractic, energy healer, it doesn't matter, wedding consultant, it doesn't matter, you don't get training in having a business. You don't get any training in marketing or sales.
Right.
Quite the contrary, when I was in psychology school, there wasn't a single second spent on even filling out insurance forms. It was just all supposed to somehow happen later. And besides, you were in practice, you weren't in business.
Right.
So the first thing that has to be overcome is to understand you are in business. When you're in business online or offline, if you want to grow past your own private practice, it's really fundamental to understand you're in business. And then, and that's one of the things that Jim and I bring to this picture, is a new spiritually oriented version of understanding what selling and marketing really are all about when, as you say, Donna Marie, you are providing something that really enhances other people's lives.
That's great. Now, Jim, following up on what Judith just said about that, a lot of our audience today are people that are like massage therapists and aromatherapy practitioners and natural healers and different types of people practicing in those areas. And I wonder, Jim, and Judith as well, have you noticed that there is any difference that you can explain, if there is a difference, between men and women when it comes to this kind of embracing the notions that Judith just spoke about?
Well, on the cliched level, the answer would be yes, and that is women are more heartfelt on the cliché. That's not always true, by the way. But women are supposed to be more heartfelt and caring and interested in the relationship. But when you really push and go deeper, so are men, and they are more interested. It's just that they do not, have not been raised to think in those directions. They've been raised to think of competition and combat, not necessarily wartime combat, but the whole idea of combat when it comes into competition. And so their thought is you can't wear your heart on your sleeve, you can't be emotional, it's business, it's just about the contracts and the T's to be crossed and the I's to be dotted. But when introduced to this particular perspective, there is a simple, common sense business principle, and that is, if what you are doing is selling one product to one customer, and you're hustling all the time, then it is a numbers game. You have to continually bring in new leads and new prospects and close them and get the sale, and then once the sale is done, you have to go out and find some more, and it's very demanding and very laborious. However, when you start creating relationships with your customers, emotional connections, give them the feeling that you care because you actually do care for their well-being, then they become return customers and repeat customers, and as a result of that, the business begins to be built on a solid foundation that is not nearly as difficult to continue with as it is when you're cold-calling all day long trying to pop the numbers into your machine.
And that makes perfect sense. I just wrote down here, creating relationships with customers turns one-time customers into return customers.
Right, exactly. And men want that just as much as women do. And that, and let's just take all of the emotion and all of the connection and all, take all of that out of it for the moment. It is better to create relationships with your customers for your sake and the sake of your business, and for your sake in terms of your heart attack and your high blood pressure, because you're also, you're constantly out there under the pressure of having to get someone else to buy, because if nobody buys, then you don't have an income.
Now, of course, business is based in large part on relationships, as you say. But, Judith, help us understand how we can sort of embrace this notion of heart-based marketing without feeling like we're getting, like, mushy and touchy-feely and you know, getting into people's personal space.
And you're quite right. We certainly had several questions that came our way when we were doing a survey that actually led to our book, The Heart of Marketing, Love Your Customers and They Will Love You Back. And some of the people who wrote in questions, it was that kind of a question. How am I going to avoid being all woo-woo and fairy, you know, fairy off with the feathers, I mean, off with the fairies, rather. So there is that concern. But the fact is, you're in business. Bottom line, you have to remember, feet on the ground, you're in business. Now, what Jim and I had to come to, and this is a core principle of soft sell, heart-based or love-based marketing, is that selling is spiritual service. And when people grasp that, it really transforms the way they think about doing business from a crass, money-grubbing, bottom line, because that's what so many service providers, that's how I used to think about it. It's just a crass, money-grubbing enterprise to be involved in sales and business. But it's not true. It's absolutely not true when you understand that selling at its essence, when you are making yourself available and your goods and services to people who need and want what you provide, and it changes their lives for the better, you are in service to them. You also need to remember to be in service to yourself, and that means that you charge commensurate money for what you provide. You don't give it away. You're not a charity. You are in business.
Donna Marie, I just want to make a point here, and that is people say what you have said, and I'm not attributing this to you. I know you're the voice of your audience. The idea of it's touchy-feely. Now, people think you can't do business and be emotional. Well, my question back to them is, where is it written that that's true? Well, it's written in the traditional culture of business. This is all about bottom line numbers. Don't take it. It's like the mafia in the movies would say, this is not personal, it's just business. But it's always personal. Now, when we say love your customers as they and they will love you back, we don't mean you're taking them into your house. We simply mean when you provide them something that they need and you provide it from the perspective of actually giving them, contributing to their lives, to make their lives better, that's a form of loving them. And how do they love you back? They love you back with their payment. And their payment becomes less about the exchange of money for goods as it becomes a gratitude for you, to you, for actually providing them with something they could not find and solve on their own. So it, in fact, is touchy-feely. It's just, it's supposed to not be. And the more that women get involved in all of this, the more the, quote, touchy-feely will be acceptable and the culture will change, which is what Judith and I are trying to lead the way to.
Well, certainly with statistics showing that women are starting businesses at twice the speed of the national average, I would guess that the topic certainly is gaining more traction than it probably otherwise would. And are you finding that to be the case, that people are seeing that they're able more now to strike the balance between having that emotional connection and being real with people and things of that nature, and also making it very clear that, you know, hey, there's value in what I'm providing, and it's not free, and I'm not afraid to say that.
Exactly. We see that growing, and we're thrilled to see it, because we estimate that somewhere around 98% of all business, online and off, is in the service provider category.
Okay.
Yes, of course, there's all the businesses that turn around investment, where it's a money-for-money exchange,
mm-hmm.
and Jim actually coined a term, which is return of experience compared with return on investment.
Let me explain that for a moment.
I do want you to return on experience versus return on investment. We're going to come back after our first break, Jim, and get right into that. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. My guests today are Judith Shervin and Jim Schnakowski, a husband-wife team and the co-authors of a book called The Heart of Marketing. And before we took our break, Jim was going to share some information about how we know whether we're going to get a return on our investment when we start marketing with our hearts. Jim, share those tips with us.
Well, let me just make the definition between ROI and ROE, and I'm assuming most of your listeners, if not all, understand ROI, but I'm going to just bear with me. I want to make a simple example. If I buy a product from you, Donna Maria, and I'm involved with you in an ROI exchange, meaning I'm expecting a return on my investment. I buy the product, and when I use it, I'm expecting the use of it to return to me what it cost me to buy it plus a profit, and that's my return on investment. And that's a simple way of understanding that exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So in the transaction, it is a dollars-for-dollars transaction, and the increase or decrease of dollars is the whole point of the event.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to ask you, imagine for a moment, Donna Marie, that you are a child-slash-parenting counselor, and a couple comes to you with their 5-year-old daughter who's having a terrible time adjusting to kindergarten. And the house is in an uproar, and the parents are not sure whether they're good parents or not, and they're feeling insecure, and the child's unhappy, and they come to you because you are a parenting counselor professional. And you give them a suggestion, and it works. They apply it, and it works. The house is settled down. Everything is fine, and they pay you for your service. They're not expecting that money to come back to them plus a profit as the object of the exchange.
Mm-hmm.
They're expecting that you will help them change their life experience.
Right. Right.
So we've coined the term return of experience for what it is that you do. Now, that doesn't mean, for example, if you look at, let's say, a real estate agent who is selling property not to investors, but to people who want to make their homes of the structure that they're buying. That is largely, even though you have to sign the contracts, and as I said earlier, cross the T's, dot the I's, that is an exchange between the salesperson and the customer that is largely a return of experience. Because when I buy a home from you on the assumption that I'm looking to live in it for a good number of years, perhaps the rest of my life, I'm not involved in that exchange with regard to what this is going to return to me on my investment. I'm involved with what it is that I want to do and live inside of it. And soft sell marketers, care service providers, largely are involved in that kind of exchange. Now I want to give one other example. Let's say for the moment that you own a Starbucks franchise on a street corner where you live. You, as the owner of the franchise, with respect to looking at it from your business, want a return on your investment. But when you're at your counter dealing with the customers who come to your store that are going to provide that return on investment, they're not looking for return on investment. They're looking for coffee and a wonderful experience. And so what you're providing them with is a return of experience. And I love Starbucks. I go back there sometimes to have a cup of tea and just sit and read the newspaper. And that's the distinction between an ROI objective and an ROE objective. And when we got into all of this, we didn't know any better. So we were writing copy for our sales presentations online that was from an ROI perspective, talking about the money you could make and the profits you can make and all of that sort of thing. And our customers were saying, but I'm not in this for the money and the profit. I'm in this for return of experience. And once we understood that, our business changed radically for the better.
So is it fair to say that if you focus on getting particular experiences for your customers, that the return on investment, as you defined it, as the cost plus the profit, will take care of itself?
Well, it won't take care of itself. Nothing actually ever takes care of itself. You have to focus on it. But you have to understand the distinction between you as the Starbucks franchise owner who wants a return on the investment and the product that you're actually providing, which is a return of experience product to your customers. And if you look across, think about people who sell cosmetics or people who are at CVS who are selling you, fulfilling your prescription, or the movies, when you go to the movies, what is it that you're involved with? Almost all businesses, except for a small percentage, are return of experience businesses,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that when they do the transaction with a customer, the customer is looking for an experience, not necessarily for a profit. Now, if you were a stock and bond trader, or if you were a real estate agent who was looking to serve only investors, ROI is the whole point. Who cares about experience? I want the return on my dollars. And that's a perfectly legitimate way to do business, but it represents a small segment of the overall marketplace. And what we have been told by people who have heard this distinction is that they're able to see their approach to their customers in an entirely different way, which makes their message clearer and more compelling because it is exactly what it is the customer is looking for. And the ROI from their business perspective is also there, but that's not the frontline exchange.
Well, now, all of this makes perfect sense to me, and I would imagine listening to it that it makes perfect sense to other small business owners, in large part, Judith and Jim, because so many of us as small business owners are looking for personal, emotional experiences as a part of the business process when we buy from other people. So we can understand that, but if that's the case, that we understand that and that's what we want out of our lives, and so many people tell me, too, you know, I don't want to shop at big box stores. I really want to do business with people that I know, people who care about me, people who I can develop relationships with. Do you know why does it seem hard for even those people to actually do this themselves? Why does it seem so difficult?
Well, I think because there has not been a model for business until now of bringing your heart and your passion and your life-transforming benefits to the forefront of how you make yourself known out in the marketplace. It has been a pretty hard-line kind of marketing and business. And certainly, we know that people who are listening to your show are very much like the people who have already read our book, The Heart of Marketing, and what they write back to us over and over again is, you've given me a new way to experience my business. Now, think about it. It's a different way of experiencing their business. It's the same business. They're still doing the same thing, whether they're manufacturing massage tables or they are out, you know, promoting cosmetics or whatever it might be.
Right.
The business hasn't changed, but they experience it differently. And what we also hear back from people who read our book, The Heart of Marketing, I want to emphasize it is the heart of marketing, because that's the change in experience, is that I want to use the example of somebody who's manufacturing massage tables. Until now, pretty much the focus has been on promoting your massage table by how much it weighs, the quality of the materials that are used, how long it will last, the guarantee, how easy it is to carry, whatever it might be, the different colors it can come in, the price point, and so forth.
So let me ask you this. We've got someone in the chat room, Mary Humphrey, who runs a farm, and she also manufactures products that she sells on her farm, and she says that a lot of her customers want to visit her there at her farm to see where she manufactures and, I guess, sort of see her actually in action, and she says that she doesn't think that's a very glamorous thing to show people, but her customers do. So is this something that she can leverage using some of your tools and techniques?
Oh, absolutely. And Mary, it may not be glamorous, but it's charming. It's so delicious if you live in the city to be able to come out to the farm and meet you in person and see how you run your, not just your manufacturing, but your farm, your life, and have that personal experience, not of just you, but of seeing what all you're doing. And you may even want to start giving tours. You may want to give little lectures, times when people can come out to the farm and you can explain what all you do there and the advantages that you have by running your business at a farm. I mean, I'm sitting here in Las Vegas all ready to sign up because I grew up in the city and I find farms just absolutely wonderful.
And from a purely traditional marketing perspective, the rule is the genius in the marketing world is the market.
Right.
Because the market's going to tell you what it wants. And so, Mary, you may feel uncomfortable because it's not terribly glamorous, but if your customers are telling you they want to come and see it, they're the genius because they are telling you what they want. Please, please listen to them, as opposed to just getting involved with your own concerns and saying, oh, my God, you know, I may have dirt under my fingernails. That's wonderful. Have
dirt
under your fingernails because I will buy from you.
And, you know, it's interesting that you say that, too, because one of the things that I'd like you to comment on is when you as small business owners and working with other small business owners, we know that when we develop those relationships that our customers will do what you just said. They'll tell us what to do. So we don't have to figure it out or make it up all on our own if we have those connections, right?
Yes, right, exactly.
We get some marching orders, so to speak.
Well, exactly, and that's where the subtitle, Love Your Customers and They Will Love You Back, it's a very loving experience to invite them into your intimate world. In this case, Mary, it's your farm, but I'm thinking when Jim and I lived in upstate New York in a tiny little town, the first season for sap and then the production of maple syrup, well, we'd never seen any such thing, and someone we didn't know very well at all down the road invited us to come watch them as they boiled sap. Well, that might not sound very glamorous either, and it's not, but it was totally intriguing. We were so touched to be invited into the interior world of how maple syrup is made that every year thereafter, and we were there for 8 years, we not only went and bought our own maple syrup there, we bought maple syrup for people in California and around the United States and shipped it every year because we'd made that heartfelt, personal, intimate connection with them because they invited us in to see their world.
Right, right. And how great, what wonderful photo ops and video ops having people come to you and being excited about what you're doing provides for you, and that helps you share even more of an emotional connection through things like your blog, and your book talks about that as well, using social media to develop these connections that are so important.
And you know, Donna Marie, it is not, this. What I'm about to say is not some hidden secret. With regard to what's happening on the Internet, where people can go and learn a lot more about a product or an offer and the competitor's product and offer than ever before, consumers are much wiser. And what they don't want is the traditional glad-handing that is an attempt to buffalo them into making a sale. People are looking for authenticity. People are looking for sincerity. People are looking for integrity in their connections. And that's where the relationship comes in. Now, we want to make a serious point here, and that is we are not in any way talking against money. Money is wonderful, and the more money you can make, bless you, because it's an indication of the number of people you are serving. However, it's not that money is the only objective. There is the service and the money, and they are equal. And sometimes service is first and money is second. Sometimes money is first and service is second. It all depends on the exchange in the moment. But this is all about also making a substantial income, a really tasty profit, and also making these relationships and connections with your customers.
All right. Well, on that note, the tasty profit note, we're going to take our final break and come back. And we're going to pick your brains about that. How does this love and this connecting translate into the tasty profit? We're going to come back and talk with Judith Shervin and Jim Schnakowski about that, and we're going to get their answer to that and a few more questions to help us be successful using the heart of marketing techniques. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here with husband and wife team, authors of The Heart of Marketing, a great book to help you understand and implement some soft sell techniques that can help you get away from all the hard-hitting, gorilla, over-the-top, make-a-million-dollars-in-your-bunny-slippers sort of marketing stuff that you might be dealing with. And before we took our last break, Jim was talking about, he talked a little bit about return of experience, which I think is so fantastic. So, Jim, between now and the end of the year, we have a couple of weeks that we can put some things into place to help us get that tasty profit that you talked about a second ago. What are some of the things that small business owners can do in the holiday downtime to start off 2010 being able to take advantage of some of these techniques?
Well, Donna Maria, I know you're asking for a tactic, how to do this or that, but before we get there, I want to say that it also requires a mindset shift, and that is, you have to really understand and grasp, and I don't mean this in some philosophical academic way, you have to get that the relationship part of your business is fundamental. Now, many small business owners have the opportunity, because they're small, they're not giant corporations, to actually make real contact with their people. But they don't make that contact from the perspective of creating a relationship with another human being. They're there, for example, to take care of, say, a service problem or to find out what's next for the customer. So here's one thing you can actually do in terms of a mindset shift and then a tactic. And that is, we break up the notion of what is generally known as customer service into two different functions. Customer service, we look at, is when something goes wrong and you are in a repair function. The product arrived and it was broken, or it didn't have a piece, or something, the wrong color, something is wrong. And so you are there to repair the relationship between you and your customer. So we call that customer service. But customer care is when you are there to enrich the relationship with your customer. And that simply means, as simple as it sounds, sending them something. For example, between now and the end of the year, make certain that all of your customers get at least some kind of greeting card from you. Now, there's a company out there called Send Out Cards that does that automatically, but that you actually take the time to focus on the relationship without trying to make any sale whatsoever. That's one tactical thing you can do. And believe me, the response that that yields is really a profit. It may not return an immediate profit between now and the end of the year, but it will set the future for 2010 in order to get profits. And again, my point here isn't that people say, well, you know, I've sent out cards before. Well, you may have, but the sending out the card this time is a way to actually focus, and you are consciously focusing on the relationship and building it instead of just another way to let your customers know, technically, I'm here.
I want to also, a couple more tactics that will stem from the whole understanding that that selling is spiritual service. And when we gave our keynote for our first conference, that was the topic, selling is spiritual service. And we had several people come up to us afterwards to thank us for pointing out how they'd been undercutting themselves by not pricing what they provided properly. And one gal was, she was in tears and she was laughing at the same time. And she said, I raised my fee three times while I was listening to you because you made it so clear to me that I was undervaluing myself. And she said, I still know I'm still not able to price exactly where I should be, but you've got me started. And she just kept crying and laughing, because she understood that she had to be in service to herself. So I want to invite everybody listening to take a real good heart-based appraisal of, are you pricing your services and your products appropriately, or is it time to give yourself a raise? And is it time to add a service or even a product that is a higher range product or service that some people would be looking for if only you were providing it?
Mm-hmm.
Because so often we as service providers come from the point of view of, oh, well, nobody will pay me that much, or nobody has that kind of money. It's not true.
I think people are afraid that if they offer something like that, I'll think of it this way. I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of someone who's fearful of that. They've got something that's working, right? But maybe they're not making as much money as they think they should be. So you're saying maybe you can offer a higher level, something that delivers more so you can charge more, and you can sort of have a two-tiered structure maybe. I think people are fearful that, okay, something's working, so I know I'm going to keep doing that or some level of it. If I offer something else, then maybe not only would I not get other customers, which maybe isn't that scary since you have plan A, but what if the plan A people find out and they think it's a little chintzy? You know, do you think sometimes that's what scares people about?
Well, first of all, yes, in general. But I'd like to then add this notion, and that is when your business is working really well and the profit is coming in and the income and the revenue and the profits are coming in, that is the time that you should start. Let me back up a bit. Your business is working well, so you've put a lot of effort into getting it to the point where it's working well. And when you see that it's working well, you can continue to nurture it, but that's the time you should start thinking about your next product. And that's the time you should start thinking about your future, because there is no business that is eternal. It is going to, that particular phase of it will slow down, mm-hmm. and you need to bring something more to your customers. Mm-hmm. And if that's happening to anybody in your audience, they have to start thinking about what the next product or what the future is like. And most people don't, because we work so hard to get it to a point where it's actually doing what we want it to do, that it's almost like, oh, now we can take a break, when in fact you can take the break of not having to work hard from a perspective of building the business, but you can then continue the business while the business is supplying you with an income. That's really, really, really critical to pay attention to. Otherwise, it'll reach its peak, it'll start to go down, and then we start to panic and don't know what to do because we're not prepared.
Now, speaking of relationships, I had an interesting Twitter conversation yesterday. I went from someone's Twitter page, which looked interesting, and some of the things they were tweeting about looked interesting. So I went from their Twitter page to their website and noticed that I found no indication at all of who they were at either location. I saw a business name, saw what they were selling. I saw no name. I saw no phone number. I saw an email address, but no name, no phone number. And so from a relationship perspective, and then I tweeted, you know, why is it that some small business owners don't identify themselves when they're using the Internet to sell their businesses, to sell their products and services? And I got some interesting responses, a few of which were, well, why do you think we need to do that? So I want to ask you what you think about that. Is it possible and or desirable to, I'm not talking about hobbyists here. I'm not talking about people who may have some stalking issues. So let's not talk about the exceptions.
Right,
right.
No. We hear you loud and clear and want to stress that particularly online,
mm-hmm.
being visible is really important. People do want to know who they're doing business with.
Do you have to use your real name to be visible? In other words, what if you have a great blog and your product photos look wonderful and, you know, you're having conversations on Twitter with your username of, you know, whatever it is, drywall contractor or whatever. I mean, do you think that it's necessary? Would you say it's necessary to use a name? I mean, I'm just wondering what you think terms of being able to create the kind of, emotional connections that you're talking about.
There is a barrier. There is a wall put up. If it's drywall contractor and I can't see your picture and I don't know your name and I don't know your story, I don't know how you came to be involved with drywall, and I don't know who I'm dealing with. And it may work for some people. If you can make it work, okay. But most of us, even when it has to do with something like drywall, I want to know who I'm going to be inviting into my home to put up drywall.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see their picture. I want to hear their story. I want to know how long they've been in business. I want to know why they're excited about drywall. And our story is so compelling when we use it to help people understand who we are and why we do the work that we do. So, you know, if you can make it work by being invisible, all hats off to you, I suppose. But
yeah.
The vast majority of us want to know who we're dealing with. It makes us feel safe. It makes us feel like we can trust you. And we know who you are, so we understand your commitment to what you're doing and why you're doing it. And that allows me, the buyer, to feel like, oh, okay, I'm in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm home.
Right.
You know, and I just want to make, perhaps this is a stretch, but it's like saying, when you go out on a date with someone, wouldn't it be nice to know who they are?
Right.
Wouldn't it be nice if you're going to get involved in something that intimate and personal? And the fact is, we have a handyman. His name is Fred. We love Fred, truly. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy. We know about his daughter. We know about his wife. His wife is a bookkeeper. He knows about us. He comes in when we have a need for handiwork, but he is in our house. And then I'm sitting at my computer, and Judith is upstairs sitting at hers, going about her business, and Fred's roaming around the house. Well,
mm-hmm.
that might be a little more intimate than most instances, but nevertheless,
right.
I need to know who this guy is. I'm not just going to let anybody through the door. So, yes, is there the possibility that something negative could happen? Sure there is, but there's also the possibility that something negative could happen just walking out the door. So our perspective is if you want to really succeed in this, you have to let me know who you are, and I don't mean in the deep detail. I just mean, for example, like at the beginning of our book, we tell the story of how we got to where we are, which helps people make a connection with us, and then when they read the rest of the book, the connection is the basis for the relationship and the reading of the book.
Connection is the basis for the relationship.
Right.
Okay, so I guess if you're not making those connections with people who are initially, anyway, complete strangers, you may not even know about the business you're missing out on.
Right.
And then business becomes really hard because we're back to cold calling.
Yeah.
It's just, we're back to cold calling and needing to close every sale. I worked in retail for once in my life. I hated retail. But I worked in retail, and we were selling in-ground hot tubs. And I wasn't a very good salesman in that context. But everybody around me was. And the owner of the store said, if they get out the door, they'll never come back. Well, there's a truth to that. But what it made me feel like is, oh my God, if I don't get them right now, I will not make the sale. Well, I didn't make a lot of sales because I was also under that kind of internal pressure. However, the sales I made referred and people came back. So it all depends on how you want to do your business.
So you may not get their credit card the first time in, but if you can grab a little piece of their heart,
right,
then you have an opportunity to make that sale that wouldn't otherwise be there.
Correct.
Exactly.
And on the Internet, that's critical because it's not like walking into somebody's store where you're shaking hands and looking eyeball to eyeball.
Right.
You don't even see them. So how are you going to make that connection? And it's incredibly important to make that connection because the Internet is a black hole.
Yeah.
It's a huge space that is completely black unless they know where to find you and how to get to you, and it's the connection that will assist in making that finding of you possible and better.
Yeah. And I would imagine that the concepts that you talk about are just made that much more effective as every new piece of digital technology comes out that helps make it more efficient for businesses to use technology to connect with their customers.
Absolutely. All of the principles hold and will continue to hold. And this soft sell, heart-based marketing is a global movement. We now have people all around the world who have read our book, who have come to our Bridging Heart and Marketing conferences. And by the way, and everyone listening, we have left up our book launch sponsor gifts at TheHeartOfMarketing.com, TheHeartOfMarketing.com, because we saw that people were so excited to get the gift during the book launch, which was earlier this year, that we thought, well, why should we take that down? And certainly now at holiday time, it's even a better time to go get the book. Oh, it's under $15 at TheHeartOfMarketing.com, and then come back and get the gifts of marketing gifts from our sponsors.
What Judith is talking about is when we launched our book, we asked internet marketing friends around the world to provide a free gift for those who bought the book as a way of inspiring and stimulating book sales. So what happens is you go to theheartofmarketing.com and you will see the book, you'll see the opportunity to buy the book at Amazon, and you'll also see there right now 60 free marketing gifts from successful marketers all around the world. When you go to Amazon.com and buy the book, you return to our page with your sales number, receipt number, which comes in the email, and you plug that into the field where that calls for that number. Click the link, and you're taken to the next page where all of those 60 free gifts are now accessible because the links are not live on the first page; they are on the second page, and you can get 60 free marketing gifts from marketers all around the world. It's our way of saying thank you for buying the book and as the marketer's way of supporting the book.
So this is kind of like an affiliate sort of program?
No.
You mentioned that. I know we weren't really going to go down that road, but I was on Amazon this morning and I saw a couple of comments about what you just described.
Uh-huh.
And I think one person talked about whether that sort of
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, and I can't remember it. I'm not reading it right now, but it wasn't guerrilla, but it wasn't as soft as he was expecting after reading the book.
What he said, I believe it was he. In any case, well, the comment was that somebody made the comment that the endorsements in the book were essentially fraudulent. That's what he was saying.
No. They weren't trustworthy because they came from friends. It wasn't that they were fraudulent.
May I? Judith has a different way of saying it. But he was saying, you can't trust these, and the reason you can't trust these is because they're coming from all their friends, and so of course their friends are going to say yes. Well, the fact of the matter is, that's not true. It wasn't coming just from our friends. But bottom line is that these were endorsements from marketers all around the world. We sent them sample chapters, and they responded. And I'll tell you right now, some people we sent it to did not respond. The people got very excited about what this book is about and how this book is indicative of where the future of marketing is going. And so, yes, there are some people who were suspicious and thought that we were just being manipulative, and I'm sorry to say that they felt that way because we weren't.
Well, I suppose there will always be people who see things that way, but I love that you mentioned it at theheartofmarketing.com, right?
Right, yes. It's the Heart of Marketing.
People can go there and learn more about the book, and they can certainly purchase it there, or you can go to Amazon and you know, get some really good ideas and good tips from Judith and Jim about how to interact with your customers and get what Jim and Judith called that great return of experience, which
right.
results in growth of your business. I love that concept. It's something that I'm going to be meditating on, return of experience, a little different from return on investment, and I think for small business owners it's something worth really thinking about. So check out theheartofmarketing.com where you can get more information about Judith and Jim's book, other tips they have to offer, their conference, and all kinds of other things. We are going to have to go. Believe it or not, our hour is up, Judith and Jim. I'm so thankful for your tips that you offered here today, and I know that my listeners have been served really well by the Heart of Marketing techniques that you've shared.
Thank you so much, Donna Maria. It's been a pleasure being with you.
Happy holidays, everyone. I will see you next week, December 21st, one day after my birthday, 4 days before Christmas, right here on Indie Business Radio. Until then, enjoy your life. Build your business and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.